What is up, guys? Welcome back to the Zach and Pat Show. I'm Zach.
I'm Pat.
This is the show about manhood, fatherhood, entrepreneurship, and the mentality it takes to be successful at those things. And we'll probably sprinkle in some helpful real estate advice, too, because that's what Pat and I do. You know, guys, life can be tough, go through some things, and struggle at times, but this is the show to let you know that you're not alone. So if you're someone out there going through any of these things, this is the show for you. Shout out to our friends at NeuroGum for keeping us energized and focused. NeuroGum is a chewing gum as well as mints. Got a little bit of caffeine, L-theanine, and vitamins B6 and 12. Helps with memory and focus. I like to chew it really all the time. If I'm driving around showing houses to my clients, making some calls, I'll chew a piece before a workout. Really, anytime I feel like I just need a little bit of a mental boost, I'll pop a piece of NeuroGum. Gets me to where I need to be. It's only got about 40 milligrams of caffeine per piece, so about half a cup of coffee, and so it doesn't give you the jitters, and I love it. So get out there and try some NeuroGum.
Also, shout out to our people over at Captain Beard Co. If you guys are looking for awesome products for men's grooming, not just beards, but I mean, they do make amazing beard butters, balms, and oils. But now they've got great body wash. They have shampoo and conditioner, and then they make these amazing smelling candles. So give them a check them out. They've got, like I said, unbelievable products that are all natural with natural ingredients made locally here in St. Louis. And if you use the promo code Zach and Pat, you'll get 10% off your purchase. So check them out.
All right, guys. And this is an episode I've been really looking forward to because we've got a ton of questions for him. We have a licensed state appraiser. He's also a licensed real estate agent, the great and powerful Bill Shrimp.
Thanks.
How are you?
Welcome.
Welcome,
yeah,
sir.
Greatly appreciated.
You're in the hot seat today. Yep.
Yeah.
Hopefully you have some good questions.
Obviously within our network here with all, me being a real estate agent, Pat being a lender, we know a ton of real estate agents. So we reached out to a bunch of people and we're like, all right, hey guys, we're having an appraiser on our podcast. You know, hit us with all the questions that you've always wanted to ask an appraiser. So we got a laundry list here for
okay.
you.
So, yeah, but good. Before we get started, tell us a little bit about yourself.
I'm Bill Shrimp. I grew up in Afton, went to CBC High School, went to college at Benedictine,
okay.
Graduated college in 87, started selling frozen foods right out of college for a company, and then got into the real estate business in 91.
Oh, wow.
I got my license, real estate salesperson's license first, and then I got my appraisal license.
So how long after you got your salesperson license did you get your appraisal license?
It took me about 2 years to get my license.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what's that process like? Because, I know we have our approved list of appraisers and things like that, but I feel like the majority of appraisers are older. Like,
yeah.
And I mean, that's kind of concerning. It's like, what are we going to do when it comes to that generation of appraisers retiring?
I know when I was taking classes, I guess I was like 24, 25 years old or so. And I'd look around the room and it's all these old guys. Well, now there's no more classes, but the few that I do attend, I'm that old guy. But
you go to those classes, do you see a group of younger people there?
No.
Okay.
No, there's not many coming into the business. And it's a good business. You know, and I printed this off earlier because I had no idea what the requirements are, but it's 204 hours of continuing education, which includes a variety of classes for appraisal practices, basic appraisal classes, USPAP, which is a Uniform Farm Standard of Appraisal classes, supervisor trainee, residential market analysis. There's a lot that goes into it. And then you need 2,500 hours of work experience hours in order to get take the test, take your state certification test.
So what would those? What would that like?
You have to find somebody to work under to mentor you.
You got like apprentice.
And that's the difficulty. When I got in this, there was pretty big shops. You know, there'd be, you know, you'd have an owner of the company, and then they'd have 3, 4, 5, sometimes 10 appraisers, and then you'd have support staff, and then that all. I guess by late 90s, everybody's just kind of gone on their own. And the shops have kind of went away. It's all like a one-man show in most cases.
Yeah, what I've seen lately is basically appraisers, and then they're bringing their kids into it. So
yeah.
We've got a couple appraisers on our list, and we'll get the appraisal come across, and it's got their sons
daughter's names on it and stuff like that. So like, I guess that's one way of doing it.
Correct.
So, your kids didn't want to do it?
No. No, my son did, and he was worried about how much I could pay him.
Oh, really?
And yeah. It's like, you know, you're kind of a liability for the first couple of years.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah.
So anyway, we wouldn't have let him starve.
Yeah.
Right.
But anyway, the ship has sailed. Yeah.
So, and well, let's dive into it. So, what are some things that you, as an appraiser, that one, what are some of your pet peeves around, and some of the things that you're getting thrown at you that just are just like, what the hell? Like what like agents with lenders? Like what are some of those pet peeves around us? Because I know that we can be pretty fucking annoying.
Yeah, no, for the most part on the lending end, everybody's pretty realistic. You know, the biggest pet peeves I get from agents is, you know, the basement bedroom or the basement square foot or, you know, the room count. It kind of gets lost. And then it is considered, it's just in a anything in the basement's handled separately in the report.
Yeah. So, well, and that's the thing. You've seen an appraisal, right?
You're like, oh, yeah, of course.
Well, like, and that's the thing is it's all broken down into different, you got above grade, below grade. Obviously, you know, when you're below grade isn't, you know, it's not given nearly as much value as above grade.
Correct. Right. And then another thing is square foot. You know, the square foot is usually everything above grade at the front door.
Okay.
So first and second floor, just first floor, and then the gross living area can include the basement square foot.
How does that work with a split level?
Split level still, everything above grade. So
the basement doesn't.
That front door is at grade usually.
Okay.
Everything else falls below grade.
Gotcha.
And it doesn't matter if there's an egress window or walk out. It's everything above grade.
Okay. Well, and then I know, I think you and I have had this conversation before, but, and I think this is one of those things that kind of help that might be heading that way with technology and everything like that, with what Fannie and Freddie are doing in terms of their what's called an SSR report, wherever appraisal we get back comes, we have to send through them. They have every appraisal ever done on every home since 2008.
Collecting a lot of data.
A lot of data. And so that's how you get property inspection waivers. So for those that aren't familiar, if you're buying a house, you're putting 20% down, and we run it through with the address in there, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac can come back and say, you know what, you're buying this at a value that we feel is right. You don't need an appraisal. You see it on, we get it on refinances a lot, but specifically on purchases, you have to be putting 20% down in order to get a property inspection waiver. But once the appraisal's done, every appraisal that we get back, we send to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, whether it's conventional FHA, they get every single appraisal that's done. Now, with conventional loans, they grade them on a scale of 1 to 5, 1 being the most accurate, 5 being highly inaccurate or overvalued. Most of our investors will require what's called a CDA or a second party to review this on anything that's a 3 and above, where we have to send it to them. They got to review it. Sometimes the appraiser has to talk to them about this and give their comments on why they gave that value to support it. I've yet to have anything come back where they're like, yeah, no, this isn't going to work. You need to fix the value. Now, but that does add a complication. It does make that process a little bit longer because it can take 3 to 4 days to get CDA back. But it does, and it can also be like kind of stressful. If you're like, shit, you know, I haven't had anything happen, but you know, there's always that one time where they could come back and say, yeah, this isn't going to work and they need to redo it. Now, luckily lately in the last few years, everything's been appraising pretty much at value or above. A lot of the appraisals I've been getting back have been above. So even if they do come back at a 3 or higher and we have to do a CDA and we can drop that price even to just what the list price is, that's probably going to put it in a position where Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac feel that it's safe. But that's the thing is everybody, and this is going to kind of lead into the next question, but everybody always wants to see conventional. But guess what? On FHA, I don't have to do that. We don't worry about those scores. So I can get an FHA back and it can be a 5, but because it's an FHA appraisal, they're going to accept it. So it's actually easier, in my opinion, for FHA appraisals to be done than conventional appraisals. What is it, being on both sides, so how is the appraisal process different on an FHA loan versus a conventional loan?
It's the inspection process. FHA requires some additional things for me to look at. you know, generally health and safety type issues, chipping, peeling paint, shattered windows. They want me to take a peek in the attic. Know what I'd be able to tell you. roof has to have at least 2 years, you know, remaining economic life. Check some water sources. Check some of the lights and stuff like that. Serves a little bit more. I'm not a building inspector. You know, I know when things can look a little off, you know, and that's when you you call for what's called predications. Unconventional, you know, in most cases, most lenders, you know, going into the house that all the utilities are on, and there's really no further look, you know, looking than that. It's walking through, taking notes, taking pictures. Every once in a while, you might have a structural issue or something that's beyond, you know, where you know something's wrong, you're going to have to call it out, but most cases, conventional is pretty smooth sailing.
Yeah, conventional, definitely a lot easier. You're not having to look at as much. But at the same time, you know, when it does come down to it, like, it's not having to go through that grading process. And actually, in my mind, makes it easier for FHA. Plus, nowadays, everything's so updated. Everything, all these places are updated and things like that. Like, if you're trying to sell your house for top dollar and you're having in a bidding war, odds are that you're not really going to have to worry about any of those chipping or peeling paints or predications like that. Yeah. Now, do you know much about the VA side of things?
I don't do VA work.
Oh, you don't do
no.
VA?
No.
Okay.
Do you know how that?
It's very long, similar along the lines of FHA. Okay. And I've had the chance to get on their panel. Just haven't done it.
Now, how does that work? Is there a reason you don't do VA? Or do you have to? Is it a separate certification?
Well, same certification. What I'd have to have done is have two appraisers write letters of recommendations for me. Then, if an area is opened up, because they kind of put you in territories, an area would be opened up that would interest me, then I would do it. I think they got availability in Illinois, which I do cover Illinois, three counties in Illinois, but I don't want to be. There's hardly any appraisers in Southern Illinois. I don't want to. VA would probably over.
Yeah.
Scott Air Force Base.
Yeah. Now, obviously, fighting a VA appraisal is very tough. Fighting an appraisal in general is tough. But
correct.
VA especially. Any tips or tricks on?
You know, I would try and, no matter what, I would, if I'm an agent, and the appraiser calls me for the appointment, I want to hear that agent's voice, if at all possible. I want to find out, even if I'm not overly familiar, or even if I'm very familiar with the area, I want to ask that agent, hey, when you put this pricing together for your list price, show me what you looked at. You know, was it comparables? Did you use a price per square foot? Or was it an irregular type property where you had to go out of the area? But I want to try and know what the agent was thinking. In a lot of cases, getting that agent to return the call or, respond to an email or a text, you know, it's too late.
So, advice for a listing agent, what would you tell him?
When the appraiser contacts you, he or she goes through Showing Solutions, the MLS, I would call that appraiser and offer the advice or the information you considered when pricing the property. Like, proactive. A lot of it, and here, there's some agents that have been told that they're not allowed to talk to the appraiser. That's not true.
Right, and then they say the same thing for lenders. No, we can talk to them. Yeah. We just can't say anything that was going to influence your decision on how you're going, like, or how I need you to appraise this.
I can't
go
into specifics of an appraisal, but we can talk generalities.
Yeah, no, because I mean, you and I have had multiple conversations about different things over the years, and you've been an invaluable resource for me. It's been great, and I appreciate everything all the questions that you've answered for me, and as well, I know Melissa takes advantage of that as well. Sometimes I don't, maybe a little too much. I don't know.
No, that's fine.
But yeah, I mean, well, and also, I mean, I'm sure this has helped you on the real estate side of things as well. Like, you're, when it comes to helping clients, whether it comes to listing a house or buying a house, like, hey, yeah, this isn't a good idea to offer more than this, or maybe I think we should list it at this because I know what this could potentially appraise at. So,
right. It gives me a better perspective. It really does. And I kind of get an idea of what buyers see or what far or what the interests are. So I think it does help me on the appraisal end of it also.
Well, that's the thing is, it's like, I would think that, like, for agents and things like that, even for lenders, it would be smart to include as part of their licensing, like, hey, you have to take so many hours worth of appraisal knowledge.
Sure.
So you understand what the hell is going on and how, like, one, like, yeah, how to price homes, how to, you know, with buyers and what to look for and all that. Because, like I said, it's a big topic, and this is one of the biggest fights that I get when it comes with agents is, like, why didn't this appraise or what's this? And then me having to go through and, like, oh, this guy doesn't know what he's talking about. And I'm like, well, I'm looking at this. I was like, one, now I have this SSR score, plus having looked at appraisals for years, I have the ability to kind of look at it. And, like, unless you have other listings that were off market that you used to comp this, we're looking at the MLS,
right?
You know, and you touched on that on the questionnaire. What's some advice that you could give to agents when it comes to putting a house in the MLS?
The MLS is my primary source. You know, tax records has come a long way and has gotten a lot better, but it's really important that agents take the time and fill out the MLS. You know, and I think with room count, room sizes, room dimensions, floor coverings, directions to a property, I've had a number of times where my GPS goes out and it's like, oh boy. And then I look at the listing sheet and it says GPS friendly. Well, uh-huh. Not too friendly at this time because I don't carry map books anymore with me. Wow. But no, fill it out. And, you know, there's some oddball properties sometimes with, like, where there could be a discrepancy on square foot. Document the source and you know, where you got that square foot. And you may also make a comment in the remarks section, you know. But just fill out the MLS. That's my primary, most important source. And pictures help also. Yeah. And you know, sometimes if you have a tired property, you know, the pictures are kind of deflected, or there's less pictures,
right?
Less description.
Yeah, well, that's something I run into a lot when I'm looking at houses to, like, price a listing, for instance, and it was maybe one that sold off market, but they put it in the MLS,
kind
and it's
purposes.
Just yeah, and it's just the one picture of the front. Yeah. You're like, I have no idea what that is and how that comparable. Sure, looking at the square footage and the bedroom bathroom count, like, I mean, yes, I guess it's kind of comparable, but we haven't any idea what it even looked like inside.
Right.
I know we have got a couple questions as far as how does, like, finish level affect, like, the price of a luxury, like,
updated appliances,
luxury finishes, like, how much is that?
You know, to put a dollar amount, it's very difficult,
sure,
but it's going to drive the price of the property. You know, today's people are the younger generation. Most of them want a property that's, you know, they don't want to be doing much.
Yeah.
And they'll pay a premium too.
Oh, certainly.
You know, so I think it's a reflection of the price. To put a dollar amount, very difficult. But I think you spend the money on a nice kitchen, nice appliances, nice finish, nice bath, you're going to get it back.
Now, does that come in with the grade of finishes, like where it's either like a C4 or C3 or condition?
That's a condition rating.
But then you've got the finishes grade, right? There's another one on there or something like that?
No, there's a quality rating.
Quality.
Yeah, which is like a Q rating. Quality is usually... you know, are you a track home? Are you a home that's more, say, shacky, which would be a lower, you know, quality, you know, or custom build, which could be a Q2 or a Q1. So, and you try and make sure you compare, you know, apples to apples in those cases, because you're going to be hopefully comparing quality finish.
Well, yeah. So, like, that's the thing, because I've got an appraisal pulled up right here. So, like, here's, when looking at it, these are all the things that they're going into. So, you know, you've got the proximity. So how, like, obviously when it comes to doing an appraisal, you're having to stay within zip codes, main and school district. What else in terms of proximity does that, and does it differ from FHA to conventional?
The lenders would prefer us to stay within a mile. They don't like us to cross highways or major roads usually also. School districts are pretty important. You know, you kind of got a pecking order here in South County. You got Hancock, Bayless, Afton, Melville, Oakville, Lindbergh, and that's kind of
order.
The chain of command. And in some of those areas, I think the lines may have blurred a little bit, because Hancock's doing very well now. I think Bayless is doing very well, Afton also. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, normally the closer the better, yeah. You know, unless it doesn't make sense physically, you know, then you kind of expand.
Right. Yeah. I had a pretty unique property, which the one we were talking about before the show started, that, you know, was a higher dollar listing. And one of the comps they used was 8 miles away.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah. Whoa. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
That this lender, they want to see something at least physically similar. Then, you know, if maybe talking about a location type adjustment.
Yeah. When we were comping that, I definitely did not go out that far.
Yeah.
I was like, wow. Okay. Yeah. I didn't know that they would do that.
Yeah.
Well, that brings up talking about comps. You know, they always talk to us about like how you guys have to bracket the sales price.
Correct.
So explain what that means.
They want to see a property that's similar in pricing, similar in size. Also, a property might be a little smaller, a little inferior in size, and then a property that's a little larger, a little higher in price. That's bracketing. That's a perfect world.
Doesn't always happen. So
very rarely. Yeah. And if you can't do something like that within the report, as long as you explain it, you're okay. You know. And most lenders, if they're seasoned, you know, they know what to look for in the report.
Now, when it comes to comps, you know, I'll have some where it just has three. And then I'll have others that will have six or seven. Does the order of the comp is there a specific weight to the order of the comps that are used?
You know, appraisers do things differently. I right or wrong, I put my comps usually 1, 2, 3. 1 being the lower sale price, 2 being the next 3. And some appraisers may put the comp that's most similar as number 1. I don't do it. I go down an explanation, say, XYZ number 1 or 2 is most similar physically and has been weighted. But yeah, it's a matter of how the agents or the appraisers taught.
Gotcha. So, I guess when it comes to that is, I mean, yeah, you're going to have every appraiser is going to appraise a house differently at a different value.
Correct.
So it's hard to, okay. So,
but I'd like to think, you know, like if agents, you know, you list a property, sell a property, I would like to think, we had 3 or 4 agents all look at the house blindfold, you know, or unknowingly. And the appraisers do the appraisal. Hopefully we're within a reasonable percentage. You know, all come to a similar conclusion.
Yeah. Oh, but one issue that I run into is an agent is really having that dispute with sellers as far as what their house is worth. I mean, I've got 2 listings coming on right now that in one of them, me and the seller are having we have about a 6-figure discrepancy on where we think this house should be listed. And, yeah.
Oh shit.
You know, so, you know, but, you know, he's ultimately it's their say and what the house gets listed for. So, you know, would you have any advice for sellers out there looking to,
you know, what I would have to say is if they come out too strong, too much, it's a race to the, you know, in this market, we shouldn't be seeing price reductions, although we are.
We are right now, yeah.
We are seeing a lot.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Well, because everybody's looking at the you know, what happened a year ago,
yep.
And they're using those comps. And,
yep.
And what I find is people wanting to list their house for what houses ultimately sold for, not what they were listed for.
Correct.
And that's a big discrepancy or big issue, and that's specifically with this one that I'm running into is I'm like, hey man, yes, that is a comp, but it also sold for $115,000 over the list price. So let's see what that house was listed for. Look, it was listed at 600. It didn't sell for it sold for 715. It was listed at 600.
Like yeah.
So that doesn't mean we can list your house for 725.
Yeah.
Here we are. You know?
Things have kind of
we'll see. I mean, who knows? We'll see when it hits the market here. But I'm a little.
That's what I tell sellers also. If I can get a grouping of sales, you know, when I'm presenting my listing, that, you know, it's not the end sale price. He goes, just look at the prices. That's where we got to start.
It's a huge deal. I mean, especially over the last 4 or 5 years where we've just seen these bidding wars. I mean, it's really been my whole experience in the real estate industry is I've not known anything different.
Yeah.
It's crazy, right?
And speaking of bidding wars, there's multiple offers on a house and all that. You guys take that into consideration at all? We've got a lot of questions about that.
Definitely, because I think the market is speaking. Mm-hmm. I always make commentary in the report that I received 10 offers or 12 offers. And a lot of times that seller doesn't take the highest offer.
No, they want the ones with the best terms.
Correct.
Yeah, that's a huge deal. Yeah.
So, but definitely take that into consideration now. You got to try and find market data that makes sense, you know. So hopefully there's some supporting market data also. And which is usually pending sales, although they're not consummated.
Right.
You know, and it's very important that agents share information as much as they're comfortable with, because I'll send out an email or a phone call. Are we at list, over list, under list? Past the inspection period, let me know, because I'm using this as a supporting comparable. But it's very important. Help me out.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just kind of, you have this whole system that's sharing information. Why not be open to communicate that, even if it's not closed yet? Like, talk, like, why not share? Like, what's it going to hurt?
See, I would, as an agent, I would be leery of putting it in print on email form. But if they would call me or I call them and they say, hey, we're under contract, it was listed for 280, we had 10 offers, we're under contract, 315, closing XYZ, and I'd document it in the report.
Yeah.
So
now what about, I mean, we saw it a lot with 2021, just been continuing to appreciate and value these homes. Do you take into time value? Over, like, say, hey, the most recent comp you could find, or one of the most comparable comps, because you can go back 6-12 months is kind of questionable, but usually 6.
Yeah.
Like, is there any sort of, I mean, obviously 6 months isn't a huge change, but there is enough of a change within 6 months, especially if you're going from winter into spring and summer.
Correct.
Is there
yeah, any? If I can see in the market where there's a time adjusted warranted, I can break out into a percentage, into a dollar amount. Now, I will add that on, you know, closed, whatever, July 2023 to current. I mean, I'll add that on
into that section. Is there like an industry standard for that, or is that just up to each individual?
Well, you got to find that number that makes sense. What's the percentage increase from whatever, June or July to current?
Gotcha. So say, for example, we get an appraisal that comes in slightly low, and there's a comp on there from 6, 7, 8, 9 months ago, and there's no time value. What would you recommend in terms of how to come up with?
Yeah. Well, you'd have to, you know, find sales from that period back to see if there, you know, there's a number, and then most current information sales, and try and find that difference or that percentage to break that down to a dollar amount. Usually break it down to a dollar amount per month. So, yeah, there was a time period where, I mean, years ago, never saw a time.
Yeah, you're starting to see it more and more now.
Yeah.
But homes.
And lenders didn't want to see a time adjustment.
That shit, I'm fighting now.
Yeah, they didn't want to see it.
Yeah. And then also, I mean, we also see a lot, and we ran into this on a new construction in Kansas City.
Yeah.
They were giving a credit. And the appraiser, I wanted to kill this appraiser. Drove me nuts. So brand new construction, house was already built. They had sold two others just like it.
I think so.
Two others just like it. Over basis, same house, and it was like 400 and 403. Both appraised out, no issues. Our client was buying it at 395. They appraised it at 389, and they took basically. They're saying, yeah, they took and literally weeks apart on these closings. And they're saying, yep, sorry, it's a depreciating market. They're giving a credit to incentivize this buyer to buy this house. So they took off the credit as part of the value of the house. And they didn't even use the comps that just closed as comps. They used other comps. And I'm just like, what the fuck?
That sounds like a tough argument there.
Yeah.
New constructions, hard to disprove. You know, the costs are the costs, as long as you're dealing with,
right,
costs. But I haven't seen many declining markets. units.
Yeah, I
recently either. Here in yeah. St. Louis.
Right.
Yeah, this was in Kansas City, and like
I've seen some stabilize here recently or flatten out a little bit.
Right, yeah. And this was the last spec house to be sold, and like I said, there was one that sold at 400, another at 403, and then they were under contract at 395, and there was a $7,000 something
yeah,
like that, like $7,000 credit. To buy.
Yeah.
Just because they're trying to get this last one. Obviously, it wasn't same. It didn't have quite the upgrades as the other two. I think there was just like a difference in elevation, like the front of the house. Like that was it. Like this one was just your standard basic elevation. The other two were advanced elevations,
right?
Which would make sense for a $7,000 to $8,000 swing in purchase price, but not 10 to 15. I'm like, what?
It was a mess.
Yeah,
we don't usually deal in Kansas City.
Yeah.
Well, I had an interesting scenario. A house in my subdivision. I was helping this young buyer out, and he had money, and he also had bank money. He was a good buyer, 20% down. And the listing came out at 224.9, and I told him, this is going back about 2-3 years ago, and I put all the information together. I said I'd be comfortable going as high as 235 on this property. And I want to make sure I get this information also if we get accepted, because this kid could close in 2 weeks or 2 months, didn't matter, which was the overriding factor for the seller choosing our contract. So we get accepted at 235. There's like 10 offers on the property. I get a hold of the appraiser, who's an Oakville guy. I guess, anyway, he's an Oakville guy. And I give him all these comparables. I give him some pending sales. Our thought behind it, listed for 224.9, he came in at 205.
What?
I'm out of my mind. And there was no sway. You know, I gave him all the data. It would have been easier. Yeah.
Well, and especially, obviously, you're an agent and an appraiser. It's like, man, I do this too. Like,
yeah.
Like, oh, there it's got to no be so sway. Frustrating.
No sway.
Oh.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
205. So he had to come up with an extra 20 grand.
Yeah.
Oh.
Which, wow. You know.
That's
brutal.
That's frustrating. Okay, so then let's dive into some more.
Yeah,
of
we got
questions.
Some
news.
We definitely had a lot of people ask this. So, and I feel like this is going to be a hard one, like it's because it's going to get kind of specific, and I'm sure it's going to vary house to house, location to location, school district, whatever it is. But, what dollar amount adds value in terms of certain items? Like, for example, like how much does a garage add? An extra bathroom, finished basement, pool, solar. I mean, we can kind of get into each one of those, but.
Well, that is very difficult. Some of that's a judgment call. We actually should use a method just called the abstraction method, where, you know, you find two like properties, one of which does not have the benefit of, say, a pool. That one sold for 400, the one with the no pool sold for 400, the one with the pool sold for 420. So you'd have to think that pool goes about $20,000 value. That'd be in a perfect world. It doesn't exist. You know, pools, COVID helped pools.
Really?
Yeah. Years.
Oh, that makes sense, I guess.
Yeah. People are at home, they're looking at the backyard and thinking, boy, it'd be nice to have a pool.
Yeah.
So even today, people are paying premiums for those homes that come available. Put a dollar amount on it. I usually, depends on the price range of the home also, because some of these pools cost, you know, $250,000. You know,
right.
I see in Ladue Town and Country, $100,000, $500,000. Some of that return is diminished where it's just craziness. But to say there's a specific dollar amount, I'll kind of consider the age of the pool, liner pool versus concrete. It's got salt water or a heater. Then I'll try and figure out a reasonable adjustment in my mind to the sales that don't have them. No matter what, though, I'll include at least a sale or two sales that have that like pool.
Okay.
So it's not like you're just going to make a blanket adjustment across the board of 5, 10, 20, 50,000. So
what about solar panels?
Solar panels.
That's become very popular, but yeah. I have these conversations all the time, and I'm like, yeah,
I got a phone call from you on that.
Not worth it.
And every time I drive by a house, I want to take those picture some of these solar panels where if I bought that house, the first thing I would do is probably move them.
Yeah, they don't.
People pay a, some people really are into those things.
Oh, they are.
And they'll, I looked at a place down in Festus, $55,000 a solar couple financed solar panels. It's going to take them 15 years to recoup that money.
No, longer than that.
Yeah.
Like, it, it,
I'm but not then gonna, if they got
but
a,
hey, they don't have an electric bill.
But then,
no, but they'll, no, they
no, still, I know, I yeah. know.
But
I
if
know,
they
I
have
know.
A roof issue,
yeah,
it becomes, I mean, there's just a lot of things, you know, and I think there would be a more, if you saw more of them, you'd say, well, market speaking.
Right.
But I mean, there's just still so few of them.
I think it depends on the state that you live in and what type of tax incentives you get from that state. Like, I know Illinois does really good tax incentives that will offset a lot of the costs that you're paying for solar. I don't think Missouri has those tax incentives. And when you look at it financially, a lot of this is spread over 25 years.
Oh, yeah.
Who the hell is living in their house for 25 years anymore? Nobody. And now when you go to sell your house, you ask the solar companies like, oh yeah, just have the new homeowners take over your loan. What fucking new homeowner is going to want to take? Yeah, they're like, no, pay that shit. It's because it's a lien against the property.
Oh, yeah. It's a solar loan.
Yeah, it doesn't. Right. It doesn't. You can't just
transfer it.
No, yeah. You just can't. Yeah. Yeah. So if you're selling your house, you now have to pay that off, which cuts into the equity and proceeds that you're going to receive from the sale of your house. Most people you're not going to recoup. At least here in Missouri, you are not going to recoup what it is that you're paying for on solar.
If you have to rely on back end.
Right.
You know, if you're, you know, I think something, you know, like the electric car, I love the idea.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you're working off all these credits, you know, I have a buddy of mine drove from Kansas City, took him 3 stops to get his car to get it.
Oh.
Yeah. And finding it like a quick charge.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny. Like you saw there was a meme out there. Someone took a picture of a Tesla in California when they were going through those power outages. And it had a gas generator attached to it.
Yeah, that's so funny.
I like the concept.
Yeah. Well, and then they think they came out with that thing that they want all engines to be electric by like 2035 or something.
That's correct. We don't have the infrastructure.
Yeah.
And then
right after that bill came out, they asked people to stop charging their electric cars because the bill.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a great concept. It's just we don't currently have the infrastructure. I think eventually we could, but I just don't think right now we do. And until we do, it's a terrible idea to try and force everyone to have electric cars and put solar panels on their homes. And unless you're going to, like you said, if you're relying on incentives to purchase something, I don't know if it's necessarily a great idea to do that.
Yeah. You know, about a year ago, I was this close to buying an electric car maybe it was probably about a year and a half ago. I almost bought one of those Ford Lightnings.
Yeah, yeah.
Did I ever tell you that story?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And I almost did it.
Did you drive it?
That was the thing. My buddy.
Is it 100% electric?
Yeah, 100% electric. My buddy, he works at a dealership, and he was like, "Yeah, take it home for the weekend, drive it around." You know, doing that whole thing. And of course, I love it. You know, I drive a truck, and for what I do for a living, I drive around a lot. But I also burn a ton of gas, and I drive a big truck. But I also flip houses and stuff too. So I like having a truck. I was like, "Oh, it's the best of both worlds." And so I drove it around. When he gave it to me, it had like 80% battery. And so I drove it around a bunch on Friday and Saturday. And then by Sunday morning, I had, I think it was like 50 miles to E. So I was like, anybody told me, he's like, hey, if you ever need to charge it, just come up here. We got the quick charger, you know, plug it in for 45 minutes and it'll get you back up to 80% at least. I was like, oh, and then they're a gym I belong to is like right across the street. I was like, oh, I'll go park it there, plug it in, go work out, come back and grab it. And then that's what I did. And then I came back and it had only gone up like a couple percent. And I was like, well, I ended up just leaving it there. And I had my truck keys and my truck was in the parking lot and took my truck home and came and dropped the Ford Lightning keys off the next day. But I was like, man, I'm so glad that I ended up borrowing it for the week because I could totally see myself forgetting to plug it in and then you're screwed.
You know, like quick charge is 45 minutes.
The quick charge. Like, man, you know, I could just see it being a lot of problems. Yeah. Oh, sorry. I know we kind of got off topic there, but what about an extra bathroom? Like how much, is there a way to put a value on that?
Well, also kind of like the pool, it's going to kind of depend on price range. And then some areas, you know, some subdivisions, it's the norm to have a bath or just a bath and a half or two baths. No matter what you're in that report, you want to have at least one like property. The low end could be a couple grand for a half bath, the high end up to whatever, $10,000.
Okay. Because, like, let me see if I can pull up this appraisal, see if this one has. I'll have. All baths, compass. So here's one. So kind of talking about gross living areas. So this one, this house has 1,441 square feet. Comp has 1,490. So a difference of 49 square feet. They knocked off $2,500 in value.
Yeah, usually, and it was the way I was brought up or trained in the business. Due to the margin of error, I don't make an adjustment less than 100 square feet. So, you know, and you start thinking, square, that's like a 10 by 10, which is a pretty good size.
Right.
The margin of error, what the agent reports, what tax records has, I mean, it's pretty.
Yeah.
Well, then here's one that, I mean, this is a $320,000 house. So the house that my first client's buying does not have a finished basement. One of the comparables has for basement. So this is what I was always confused about. So RR is that rec room, and then BR is bathroom, and then BA is bedroom, right? Where bedroom is BR, bathroom is
there
BA.
Go.
Gotcha.
Correct.
So this has, so total square footage in the basement is 1470, 1,000 finished. It's got one rec room. Zero bedrooms, zero bathrooms, and then it says 10.
Oh, you made a, it's like a $15,000 adjustment.
But they made a $15,000 adjustment off the basement for not being finished versus finished for just one rec room.
Yeah.
And that's that's one of the larger adjustments I've seen.
It's 1,000 square feet. You know, if it's available in the pictures, I'll also take a look at that quality. Has it got drywall ceiling? Carpet,
nice. Mm-hmm. Well, so that was another question I got about finished basements. When it comes to that, because now we're starting to see where when people go to finish, you know, they're epoxying the floors or they're leaving
open
ceilings and exposed beams. They've got it's not like drywalled and things like that where it's completely finished or have the vinyl plank and stuff in the basement. Is there a cost on that comparing those?
Generally, because like these rehabbers, they're the ones that kind of started a lot of this, you know, painting the joists.
Black.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, dropping recessed lighting in, painting the walls concrete. You know, I'll kind of take, if I'm doing the appraisal on a particular property, sometimes that finish won't exceed the cost to get it, if that makes sense.
Gotcha.
But if it's a nicer finish with drywall, but I've come around a little bit to the recessed ceiling. Some people really like that
look. Right.
Yeah, they do. And because it makes it feel a little bit bigger.
Yeah. I mean, it's an inch or so cropped. But I know a lot of people like that. So I've come around with painted joists with recessed slide.
I'm going to do it down here eventually.
Yeah.
Wanted to do it before we moved the podcast studio down here, but I just didn't have time and I just didn't want to have to move everything to get my buddy in here with the sprayer.
You know, I think I read somewhere like on the basement finish, just exposed concrete, you know, can almost diminish, you know, unless it's a nice polished finish or a stained finish. But it should be like a luxury vinyl or carpet, you know, some type of basement.
Gotcha. Now, one other, got this one asked a lot too with the new changes in commission. And how now when it comes to negotiating, people are having to adjust their price or offer higher to get commission covered. Is that going to be kind of a similar adjustment when it comes to like those, like getting a seller credit or anything like that? Or how's that?
I mean, you know, and no, it has no bearing on the appraisal whatsoever.
Nor it should. I shouldn't.
Yeah.
My opinion,
it shouldn't.
Well, you know, like if you have to sell a house for sale by owner or you use an agency, or not. So the amount of commission makes no difference to me.
Yeah, I was just curious because you're seeing people credit. Like a house that might have been listed at like say 400, but now they're having to bump it up because they're not covering or offering commissions, and then they increase the sales price to
greedy seller.
Right. And then they increase the sales price to say 410 to cover commission. And I mean, that, I feel like that could come into play and be an issue.
Yeah. No, shouldn't be an issue.
No.
Okay. I had some on the real estate end of it, Zach. I'm not sure if you've seen it. Charlie, when that commission agreement went in for August 17th or whatever that date was showing some properties and sent out an email, make sure there's a commission agreement. It seemed like for the first month, it seemed like it gave the sellers, I was seeing just very low commissions being offered to the selling agency. You saw that.
A little bit, a couple times.
Yeah. But, yeah, the first month it was like,
I'm running into it a little bit more now, honestly.
Yeah, I haven't recently. It's been better for me.
Yeah, I mean, I always I always have consultations with my buyers, especially the ones that are selling and buying and selling at the same time or this and that. And you know, they always ask me like, oh, well, what do you? I'm like, well, make sure you're paying a buyer's agency. You're limiting your pool. And I was like, just think about it like this. If you're going to buy a house now and you're going to offer on a house that doesn't pay commission, now you got to pay down payment, closing costs, and your agent's commission. That's probably going to pass on that house, right?
Right, because it's going to cost you an extra.
Right. And they're like, well, yeah, probably. I don't have that much money. I said, okay, exactly. So when you go to sell,
right,
you got to imagine you're going to limit your pool of buyers by a lot.
Significant portion.
Yeah, just because you're trying to save a couple extra bucks. Like,
yeah.
You know, and I think that, I mean, when I sold my house recently, I thought it was, used it as a negotiating tactic. And this was kind of where people got a little misconception about what EXP was doing. But EXP, they didn't do the CCD. They didn't put how much they were paying out in CCD because it's all negotiable. So like, that's kind of,
well,
what
that's happened. Now how it's done. That's how we're doing it now as well. Yeah. Where it's not.
Well, and I think
you're just writing it in. You write your commission into your offer.
Right. And I think that's smart.
It's a great way to do it.
And because now, like, we had three offers on the house, all the exact same, except commissions were different. And so we went back to the offers and we're like, hey, listen, you want this house? We've got this one offer that we're considering that's commissions being paid out is way less than what you guys are offering. We had one guy that was like 1.5%. I'm like, get the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
I was like, when I
got in this, 7% was generally the starting point for listing agreement.
Yeah.
And also, if I could get a listing for 6 months to a year, you know, that hopefully 6 months. I mean, you didn't plan on property going under contract for three, 4 or 5 months.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's different.
That is different. Yeah. What kind of changes have you seen in terms of?
Well, I think COVID, you know, that commission rate is slowly, I'm not sure if it's gotten in tune, you know, the market, you know, has set these rates, but I think COVID kind of made an adjustment, you know, where it used to be commission rate to a buyer's agent was generally about 2.7. I see it two and a half all day long.
Yeah, now 2.5 seems to become the standard, it seems.
I think that started with COVID.
Yeah.
At that time. An adjustment.
It's rare that I come across anybody paying more than 2.5.
Yeah.
I would say 70% of the time it's 2.5.
Yep. I agree.
A lot of the buyer's agency agreements I get, because we have to get them now, are all for 2.7. So even if they're paying 2.5, coming out with an additional 0.2 is a make or break a deal for somebody. It shouldn't. But yeah, I mean, I see 2.7 on pretty much the majority of the buyer's agency agreements that I get when I do get buyers under contract. I've got a few that are at, and you know, agents are good.
Yeah.
They get it and they work hard for it. So, it's been a big change, and now needing to get a lot more documentation. I'm always like strange. Oh yeah. I need your buyer's agency agreement. Like ever something I used to have to ask for, but yeah, it's something on our side. So,
well, I got a good one here. What's the weirdest building you've ever had to appraise? And then this person put jail, comma, commercial building, converted residential, comma, historic, except, et cetera. Any weird ones? Like I the first one that kind of comes to mind, or what comes to my mind is there's that, I don't know if you've seen it, but there's that one house in city that was like a church and they converted it to like a residential house. Like an old church that they like turned into like a crazy like mansion. But yeah, is there any, have you ever had any weird ones?
Did like an old firehouse in Afton that was converted, but it wasn't, still kind of looked like a two story with a garage in it.
Okay.
So it wasn't too. Did a house in Chesterfield. I'm like, now it's right in the brush in the business. Probably had no business doing it. It was a big old house on 18 acres. It's kind of true. Nothing really.
What about, have you come across any like pool barns or barn dominiums? And
yeah, actually, barn dominiums getting more popular.
Oh yeah, it is. I have so many people that say, oh, I want to buy land and build a barn dominium. That's fucking everybody wants to do.
I also did Soto, was a finished silo.
Okay.
Oh.
Which was pretty neatly done.
Cool.
Yeah.
And now that you think about it, I did a barn also. Residents on one. These were in-house type. But there was a, kept their tractors and all that on, down below. Nice big residential area. Had a basketball second.
That's awesome.
Back half.
Where's that?
Barn that was done to Soto.
See, cause, yeah, I mean, well, that's the thing is we can't lend on those yet. They haven't come out with, you know, manufactured housing is about the craziest or extent of anything that we can really do. Then they haven't really come out with financing options yet for barn dominiums or that, or container homes. Like that's another.
That's
becoming a thing too.
Yeah. Get one of those containers for $2,500.
Really?
Yeah.
That's what they're building.
Well, I mean, it's smart. I mean, think of how cheap you can build a house with container homes.
Yeah, because how many of those containers do you need to build a house? Like 8?
Maybe.
Yeah.
No?
I don't know. Because they're what?
Yeah.
They're 20-something feet long by
10 or 12.
10 feet wide.
I mean, yeah. You get 8 of those things together, stack them, and you can make something pretty cool.
Yeah.
Oh, that was, you said acreage. That made me think. Is there a good way to price out? Because I've sold a lot more houses recently that have some acreage or got anywhere between like 3 to 10 acres. Is there a good way to price additional acreage? Like other than, I guess cause sometimes it's hard. You can't find a comp that has the exact same amount of acreage.
Right. You know, and then sometimes you can go to, you know, to find that number. A lot of times you don't get a dollar for dollar return on that additional acreage or less acreage.
Yeah, and then I had another one that recently was like, he's on 3 acres, but the whole thing's a cliff.
Right.
You know, and I'm like, that was our.
So what's the difference between that 3 acres and one
and,
acre
and
two
when
acres.
A beautiful flat, you know, land, usable land.
Yeah.
So
no, but the way to make some type of adjustment would be to find out just the price per, you know, if you just got vacant ground. Found
price per acre.
And then this is something that I've always found interesting, and it's funny because you see it a lot, but like homes that are being first sold with multiple like dwellings on it.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Like there's one in Barnhart that was listed for like $425 and had 3 houses on it. They were all shitholes. And I'm like, I even told the agent, I'm like, yeah, this isn't gonna and told the clients, I'm like, this is not going, like, figure out what the value of the one house that's being sold is and then maybe add 20. That's the largest that I've ever seen is a $20,000, and that was
one of our deals.
That was that had the guy built. Shoot, that, how much do you think that garage cost? Probably close to $100,000 to build that garage.
Yeah, I mean, it's a, this giant 4-car garage with like a
beautiful.
You know, it was awesome. I mean, it's on, and it was on like, I think the house was on two
acres.
Yeah, or like 2.5, something like that. I mean, he had this big ass. I mean, the garage is bigger than the house.
Yeah,
you know,
like, and it was beautiful and. Yeah, and I told Zach the same thing. I said, because I had a feeling like this guy's pricing in this full garage into the value of this.
He built
it. It was a manufactured house. And, you know, I think it was originally listed for what, $425? Something like that.
Yeah,
and I think our clients got it for like low threes.
Yeah.
And I was like, I guarantee you he has that. I think he has that garage built into the price of this. And I was like, honestly, the most I've ever seen given on an accessory dwelling is what they're called, is $20,000. And that's exactly what they gave that garage, was a $20,000 bump.
I did one for you guys, Gil, two houses.
That was mine. One was a dance studio.
And actually, the dance studio, the secondary building, was probably a little nicer than the front building.
Yeah.
But again, got to find at least one like sale. And in that area, MLS has come out now with where you can put a mother-in-law quarters. It's a little easier search to find that second dwelling. Otherwise, years ago, you'd have to go back and everyone.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, and the great couple, I've just talked to them recently, added another building property. So now they've got three. And I was like, good for you guys.
Yeah.
It's always interesting because you see that and people add in those prices. Like, I feel like that person, when they're selling that house, then Barnhart with the two other dwellings on it, was including the value of all of those into one. But when you break it out, like, yeah, each individual house might have been worth $130,000. Yeah. They're trying to sell for like $420. I was like, fuck. Nope. Not happening, guys. So, when it comes to luxury homes, like high end, I mean, is that appraisal process like all the same?
Very similar.
Yeah, very similar. Yeah.
Yep. Make sure you're comparing like to like. You know, yeah, very similar.
Now, you do also, we were talking about this before we got on, you work with a lot of hard money lenders when it comes to helping investors buy and flip properties. And also it kind of goes into the same track of renovation loans, looking at ARV. What are some of the main things when looking at flips or even just looking into a property for clients that are wanting to add value to their house? What are the things that are going to add the most value by fixing up or adding, like obviously adding a bedroom or a bathroom, not in the basement. It's not going to add value that you think, but being at having an addition.
Kitchen and baths.
Yeah. Kitchen and bath are where you're going to get the most bang for your buck. Yeah.
Paint is relatively, patch and paint, nice coat of paint, big scheme of things, it's inexpensive. So,
better bathrooms and kitchens.
Yeah.
And we were having this conversation because we were talking with one of Zach's investors and issues he's running into with ARVs. Like, he's getting.
Well, he's using hard money lenders and they're giving him his ARV of what the thing's going to be worth when it's all finished. And it seems like these numbers are being inflated a little bit. And
they have similar guidelines to like you.
Do they?
Yeah. On my end, I felt pressure. I mean, I submit them. I just started this about 5 months ago. I got a phone call one day and the guy introduced himself. Yes. Had any interest, I could pearl from him. He had a bunch of extra work, so I started doing it at that time. But for these investors, everybody's in. They're running. It's a lot of too much on their purchase. Yeah. No?
Money's made on the buy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, because there was a couple. I mean, he got pretty decent. He bought them for pretty decent prices, but then they're coming back and
coming back and telling them that it's going to be worth. Actually, the same guy we were kind of talking about earlier, and saying it's going to be worth mid 700s. I don't see that, but. And just in the comps that they're using, they're like, this house is technically a 2-bedroom. He says he's adding a bedroom, so it's going to be a 3-bedroom. But then I look at the appraisal.
And where's he adding it? Basement or off the main level?
Well, it's going to be on the second floor, but it's going to have
tight. Yeah, and there's all kinds of restrictions. Second.
Mm-hmm.
There has to be 7 feet.
Right.
7 foot of height by at least 5 foot wide. Before it's cut, and it's got to be vented for HVAC.
Yeah, and
so
I don't know. It's gonna be a tough one, And I don't know. We're gonna see.
Yeah,
it's coming on the market soon. So
that
was my mind went to, well, hard money lenders, they're trying to make as much money as they can on in a short period of time. Maybe increase that ARV, thinking that they can sell it, but then that house sits for a little bit longer, so they're making a little bit. But I don't know. Just thinking outside the box on stuff like that, but who knows, And I was told Zach, he was like, here, call Bill. Bill will shoot it to you straight and let you know for sure. I mean, do you do a lot of the renovation stuff for Guild, or I mean, we don't.
I don't do any for
you. We don't really do. No. I think we, well, we have one.
What was that loan officer?
Stephanie Shipley.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Because she asked, she goes, "Do you not? Are you familiar with that?" So I do it for a number of lenders. She goes, "I'll get you on the list." But
done, well, that's done the thing you. Is so so she's the only one. Well, was I, not sure she. I'm not sure if she's still doing it, but she was the only one in our region that was allowed to do renovation loans once COVID hit. So they narrowed it down. So any like. I think I've sent her the most renovations that we've had. I think like three, and yeah, and that's she's like, yeah, I know it, so I can talk people out of doing them because they are a major pain in the ass. And I could call all three people that she did them for, and they would say like, yeah, I would never do that again.
Yeah,
I've only done like one or two 203Ks, and yeah. They were a nightmare.
Yeah,
yeah. Well, never the 203K appraisal also pain in the ass.
Is it?
Is it?
I believe it.
Yeah,
yeah. You gotta. Yeah, because you got to appraise something on what it's going to be worth, but you don't know, you haven't seen it yet. And yeah, I can imagine that being a big problem.
There's a number of lenders where I do these every day, the ARVs, but everything's held in-house. You know, it's not sold out to the secondary. And you get to know some of the people doing the work. And so you know their finish is going to be
top-notch.
Yeah, yeah, good. They're not going to be skimping.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that was actually a question we got from one of our one of my buddies is a contractor. He said, "Hey, does the quality of craftsmanship come into the appraisal?"
In the big scheme of things, yes. Yeah, can you narrow it down? But something like that, you got to make as an appraiser, you should make note.
Sure,
you know, this isn't just a run of the mill rehab. I mean, the quality of finish is exceptional.
Right. Yeah. I mean, so I've seen we've seen it all. We've seen the landlord special, and then we've seen the guys who. Are meticulous about every square inch of the house.
Yeah.
And
yep. Now that goes into eventually you got to draw big picture. You know, you can't adjust or consider everything.
Yeah. It's not going to add additional tens of thousands of dollars probably. But
yeah.
It's one considered. Of those things.
It'll push it.
Sure.
Push the value.
Yeah. That makes sense.
And here's one that this is kind of a unique question. How do you handle properties with two separate tax IDs on the same property house? Like, so for example, the house is on one, and then there's another tax ID that has the pool on it, but it shows as one property.
It's usually going to depend on the lender. Usually, I think on your end, on the lending end, it'll be encumbered so that buyer cannot separate it.
Right.
Correct.
Correct.
So usually, I'll consider the whole package.
Okay.
You know, but in the report somewhere, I'll break it down. Tax ID number one has improvement of a pool and a half acre. House is on parcel number two, with number 3 acres.
Gotcha.
But yeah, no, I usually, and some lenders will want it. Some lenders won't make that loan.
Yeah. I know for us, as long as it's all in one, we're okay with it.
Yeah. Yeah,
and it's included in like in the listing, all that. It's
yeah.
Both parcels and
yep.
By the same person. Yeah, I know there's quite a few that don't. So,
you get that really long one. That was the only one I didn't put on here that was. Like,
oh, that was from Susie. That was about the basement.
Oh, okay. All right. So we already got that. Yeah, I read through that one, yeah. And I was like, all right, that's the only one I didn't put on our list here. Because it was like
she
sent a novel.
She voice texted it to me. So,
in today's market, you know, stainless appliances almost said. Norman.
Yeah, it's like
yeah.
It's weird when you don't see
yeah.
when you go in somewhere and you see black or white yeah. appliances now. Like yep. The stainless is pretty much the standard.
Yep.
Like whereas before it that was always seen as an upgrade.
Correct.
You know, I mean.
So yeah, so here's a good one. So can you explain the different types of approaches? So you've got sales comparison, cost approach, and income approach.
Correct.
And then which can you explain why or what they are and how they're different and then why we use the sales comparison approach the most.
Like with single, you know, like the income approach would definitely be most beneficial for larger complex properties. Usually six families or.
So like investment properties.
Investment properties.
Yeah. Apartments.
Yeah. Apartments. Yeah.
That's how, yeah, that's how you value, you know, big apartment complexes. I got some friends that do like the big syndication
yep.
deals.
What about like properties that are being sold as like, that are investment properties is like, single family homes that are like on Airbnb or stuff like that.
See, the jury's a little out on that because I still consider just the real estate because there's a lot of personal property that's in that unit
sure.
generally the lender doesn't want to see personal property.
No.
So I've been doing it's just been the real estate. Okay. That's all I've been considering. And I document it, chooses an Airbnb, brings in $6,000 a month. It's a $1,000 house.
Yeah.
So, but the cost approach, it's most, you know, I use a book called Marshall Swift Cost Manual. It's most accurate with newer built home. You know, so you got to figure out whatever the depreciation is old home. So you kind of lose the accuracy with the older existing home with the cost approach. I always include the site value if I got a pretty good handle.
So with the cost approach, so you're saying, you guys use, do you use the cost approach then on a new construction?
New construction, yes. Up to maybe 5 years old.
Okay.
Generally, cost approach.
Okay.
Yeah. After that, you start losing.
Gotcha.
So and then the market approach is the most.
Yeah, it's probably the most common, right?
Common.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you've got the speed, you know, where you got to actually physically close sales of similar properties to yours to make a measurement to the property that's being sold or even the appraisal.
Gotcha.
So the market approach is the best.
Awesome. And then what about like new roofs, HVAC, things like that? Do those things?
I know if I was buying a house, I mean, do I put a number on it? I make mention in the report, but I know as a buyer, especially like a first-time home buyer or a conventional buyer with limited means, it'd be worth paying a little more up front for those new things. I think it probably would. You know, they're big ticket items that, you know, roof could be $10,000, $15,000, HVAC, $10,000. So is there a dollar amount I put on it specifically? No, but I make mention.
Sure.
Gotcha. Now that you have, so like we've got all these comparables, we've got these different approaches, we've got the numbers. How do we get to that final number?
I usually like picking out sale or two sales, or if I got three sales that offer the highest degree of similarities. You know, usually after you, since it's not a perfect world, you'll have a range of values. Usually I like trying to find a grouping of sales that offers the highest degree of similarities and then there. And I also consider, you know, pending sales. So if you got a range, your pending sale might push that to the upper end. In some cases, the lower end or a competing listing might push it to the lower
end. Gotcha. So there's not just like some sort of calculation.
No, there's
an average.
No.
All right, we're looking at this based on these numbers and what we're looking at. Well, I'm going to say it's worth this.
Yeah. So sometimes I'll have a grouping of sales after making some adjustments. I might have 250, 250, 249, and 230. Well, I got three sales. At,
you know, 50.
Yeah. So.
250. So it's 250. Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah, I was always curious, like, is there like a algorithm that just you plug in and it pulls these numbers that you guys have compared the house to and come up with that spits out an average of them or what or how that works? But yeah. Do you like when agents meet you at the house?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it a preference? No, but as long I just like making contact with the agent at some point.
Sure.
There's some agents that are still meeting, which you know, now I got to give a narrower time range when I show up. But, I like meeting the agents there. But would I think any less? No.
No.
Just someone I had that conversation.
Gotcha. Now, another question was how, like, someone's trying to buy a property and there's a house on it, but they're only wanting the value of the land. Is there a way that you, like, tear down and rebuild? Like, they're trying to go in and, like, hey, this house is for. We're gonna sell you this house. Perk huge at this.
Yeah.
Right? So like,
I do those all the time.
We've got this house for sale that's, you know, $300,000, but like, what portion of that $300,000 is the house being considered? What portion of that is the land itself?
See, like Kirkwood and Webster, sometimes you're at a point. They're very forgiving markets. You know, you can buy an old home in Webster in some cases. In Kirkwood and buy it, live in it, and just be fine. You can buy it, rehab it, sell it, somebody would buy it. You can buy it, put an addition on, somebody would buy it. You could buy it, tear it down, build a new home, somebody would buy it. So they're very a forgiving market I mean, they'll accept all three, but there's some times where that site value, you know, that little bungalow or that little ranch or 1.5 stories offering no value at all. Yeah. So
gotcha.
That makes sense.
Yeah. And then you heard a lot, not so much recently, but you've heard a lot about it in the past in terms of appraisers. And I was always curious how this could happen, but different valuations based on the race of the person buying or selling a house, that the house would appraise less on that. Have you heard any?
No.
Yeah. There was like an article that came out a few years ago talking about how basically the appraiser would go in and see pictures on the wall and see that it was a family of color, and then they would reduce the value of the house because of that. And I know that quite a few appraisers got in it, but I was always thinking, I'm like, that's just a shitty appraiser.
Yeah, I was going to say. That like, that's like just a shitty guy.
I was telling Zach prior to you getting here, you know, I take all appraisal requests. I don't check zip codes or areas or anything like that. I take them all. But we're taking a, you know, if you notice or if there is a appraisal request that comes over, it's in a, you know, a zip code that may be a little less desirable. It's a form of discrimination. So, I mean, I generally take
everything.
Yeah. There's no difference.
Now, have you heard about the changes that are coming out for reconsideration of value? Yeah, conventional and FHA. We literally just got the email last week about it.
No.
Oh, it's just, I didn't know if it was anything that was going to change on you, but I haven't
changed my phone number.
it's going to be more for on our end process of doing it. But what's some advice? What are some advice or what is some, what advice can you give to agents and lenders when it comes to submitting a reconsideration of value? What is it that would really help? Like, obviously, we need to look at the appraisal and see what comps you use, but what would you recommend to agents and loan officers on reconsideration of value? What to have to be successful?
Yeah. You know, first of all, it would be to have good, accurate data. Because a lot of times, you know, if I may have a little discrepancy on value on a sale price of a property, the agent send me data, but it's like everything in three zip codes. And it's like, well, how'd you arrive at anything based on this? But no, the best thing would be to have good, accurate data. And be, you know, if there are significant differences of that data, like, hey, this one had a nice kitchen, mine didn't, or whatever the case may be. But, you know the product, you know. But I know there's some appraisers you might have a hard time with that reconsideration.
Yeah, there's everybody on, at least at Guild, I know all the appraisers, and I know which ones I can reach out and talk to and be like, hey, you know, what's going on here? And then I know there's other ones. I'm like, fuck.
Screwed.
That's, like, you might as well set that one in stone. It's not changing.
Yeah, I see their name. I see their name come across, and I was just like, fuck.
Yeah,
I'm the same way with county, with St. Louis County occupancy guys. Oh god,
they've gotten out of control.
There's a couple. I mean, especially the county. The city's fine. City, you don't have to worry about as much. But man, there's a couple of the ones out in St. Louis County where I'll meet them at my listing or whatever, and I see him get out of the car, and I'm like, him? Why him?
Have you run into any issues on that county inspection or occupancy inspection regarding drywall that's timestamped?
All the time. Well, if there's a small crack in the drywall, you gotta mud it. It's always in the garage too.
Yeah.
It's like, dude, it's a garage. Like, yeah. You have to mud and tape every seam in the garage. Come on.
Yeah. They've gotten.
That's a fire hazard.
Yeah.
Come on.
You've gotten a little overreaching.
It's ridiculous. I mean, it's just every time. I mean, I've gotten pretty good at spotting what they're gonna call out, but I mean, but still, you could have three different county inspectors in there, and they're going to give you three different things. Yep. You get three completely different reports.
How about what the seller goes through? They get a contract. The buyer gets their inspections. They get knocked around a little bit. In some cases, they have the appraisal. Then they got county.
County.
It's like,
yeah,
my gosh.
I know. Yeah,
it's a lot to go through.
That's why those terms in those offers are so important.
It.
That's what you can really tell the experienced seller versus the not experienced seller. Or the people that might be first house. Cause that's been a lot of my clientele where it's their young couple that maybe they bought this house fresh out of college. And now they have one kid, maybe the second one's on the way, and they're selling that little house in the city and moving out to the county, and then when the offers come in on their house, and they're just always going to pick the one that's the highest number. And I'm like, hey guys, listen. Yeah, I know this one's $5,000 higher, but this one is not. They're basically waiving their inspections. You don't have to do the occupancy. They waive the appraisal. Like, this is like almost a guaranteed thing for five. You know, I was like, this one, we have inspections. We got to do the municipal inspection. And there's an appraisal contingency. There's a lot that can go wrong here. This is way more sure.
Yep.
And, you know, that's where I find that dealing with more people who have, it's not always the more experienced people, but I find that most often, but just people that can kind of see the bigger picture, and they just see the dollar sign, and they're like, oh no, I want that, right, that $5,000 yep. more, you know?
Yep.
Frustrating, but it is what it is. It's what we deal with. It's what we sign up for when we get into this industry, right guys?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know? So,
that's all the questions that I've gone through on my phone and through the list here. Anything else you want to add before we?
No, I really appreciate you having me on.
No, absolutely. Fun, man.
Thank you. Thanks for coming on. Yeah, I know that a lot of people, you know, will get a lot out of this, and I know that I've learned a lot over the years too, not just sitting here. I mean, it's been a great resource for me, so I appreciate that. So thank you.
No problem. Yeah.
Thanks, Bill. Well, thank you for coming on. And
one last thing before we end this thing.
That's right.
We always play this game called the Tombstone Game. Here lies Bill. What's it say on your tombstone?
He's honest to a fault.
Love it.
Perfect. That's
perfect.
Awesome.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for tuning into the show. Make sure you hit that like button. If you are not subscribed, click that subscribe button for us, and we will see you next time.